Every hour of every day, millions of emails ping around the world bearing gossip, news, business, and blonde jokes. But is there a right way and a wrong way to send email? We're pretty sure that Nigerian prince's solicitation isn't exactly a model of email etiquette. But there's a lot more to sending good email than just etiquette. Fortunately, now we have a guide. Send, the essential guide to email for office and home. Authors David Shipley and Will Schwalbe join us today to offer their advice on what makes good email, how to avoid email embarrassment, and to take your questions. Later in the hour, the mystery of Sanjaya, how a would-be American Idol who can't sing or dance but has truly exceptional hair may just take the title. But first, the do's and don'ts of emailing. Do you have a tricky note you need to send, but you're not sure how to set the right tone? Have you been on the receiving end of email you were never meant to see? Did you ever have that moment of panic after accidentally sending off an incomplete or ill-judged email, or worse? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Joining us now from our studios in New York are the authors of Send. David Shipley is the deputy editorial page editor and op-ed editor of the New York Times, and Will Schwalbe is the editor-in-chief of Hyperion Books, two gentlemen who see more than a few emails in a day's work. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you.
So your golden rule is send the email you'd like to receive. Well, maybe I just love sarcastic emails. I mean, how does that rule really work for everybody?
Well, the way the rule works is we all want fewer emails. Our inboxes are filled to bursting with things we have to do.
Amen.
Email's terrific. It's useful. It's a great way of exchanging information. But the most basic type of email that we'd like to receive is fewer emails. And we really believe if you send better emails, you get fewer emails.
The point, too, is that if you tend to send a lot of sarcastic emails, we presume that a lot of your friends like to send sarcastic emails. And one of the most interesting things about email is we sort of embarked on this year-long email odyssey was that, you know, people respond to mirroring in emails. And if you change your behavior, that can be incredibly disconcerting when it comes to email. So if all of a sudden you're happily sarcastically emailing your friends and you've been sarcastically emailing for years, and all of a sudden you get a very different email, that's when it can sort of throw you for a loop.
So let me get further on this idea that if you send better email, you get fewer emails. Explain that.
Well, one of the best ways to get fewer emails is to send more specific emails. We all get emails that are something like, "Where's Rebecca?" And that involves sending an email back where you have to say, "Rebecca who?" And then the person has to send an email back and say, "Which Rebecca?" And then you say, "Well, why do you want to find Rebecca?" And they send an email back. And before you know it, you've exchanged 15 or 20. Whereas if the person had just said, "Where's Rebecca Roberts of NPR? I want her to call me. Here's my number."
And boom. Here's why.
And here's why. Done.
So more information, specific information. What about these questions of tone? You spend a lot of time in the book saying that because it's a print medium, it is subject to misinterpretation. You can't hear inflections of voice. You can't necessarily get a joke. So how do you make sure that somebody understands your meaning?
Well, that's the beauty of the emoticon and the exclamation point.
Now, I have to say I was surprised that you all were emoticon fans because they drive me batty.
Well, we were surprised too, you know, because when we started out, you know, I think we both sort of snickered at emoticons and thought they were sort of more appropriate to IMing in high school. And, you know, because this is an essentially affectless medium, and it's an affectless medium that can be very deluding. I mean, as we had a long talk with Dan Goleman, the author of Emotional Intelligence, about this, who,
Let me just interrupt you to explain that emoticons are those little smiley faces or winky faces or surprised faces that people build out of colons and parentheses.
And there's a wonderful galaxy of them, too. I mean, they aren't just smiley faces with a parentheses, but you can find a Harry Potter and you can have, you know, an Abraham Lincoln, and there's just absolutely wonderful variety. But what Dan was talking about was that email somehow lulls you into this state of disinhibition. That is, you think that you are, you know, registering with someone in the way that you'd be having a conversation, that they would, you know, they would pick up your sarcasm. They would pick up, you know, the winks and the nudges. And in fact, with email, you don't. And the hardest thing about it is that we somehow delude ourselves into thinking that this sort of emotional valence is coming across a screen, and really it isn't. And so the emoticon or the exclamation mark or anything that you can do to insert tone into an email that will help the person who is receiving the email understand what you mean is all to the good. So in the end, we're both emoticon fans.
And exclamation points.
Absolutely.
Just to convey lots of enthusiasm.
Well, exclamation points, sort of the emoticon, convey enthusiasm, but they also take a simple statement of fact and they put a positive spin on it. So I'll see you at the meeting is just a dull sentence. And it could almost on email, because email takes everything down a notch, it could almost convey dread. But you add one, two, or three exclamation points and all of a sudden the person knows you actually really want to see them at the meeting.
Now, I have to say, in reading your book, and you bring up the potential misreadings of so many sentences, many that hadn't occurred to me, did you find yourselves getting very deeply inside your own heads and inside your own writings to think, well, maybe this could be misinterpreted as not concise, but actually sort of blunt and rude, and this could be misinterpreted as not chatty and friendly, but actually irritating and too personal, and did you start to drive yourselves a little mad?
Well, no matter than we had already been driven by email. I mean, I remember very clearly a whole day spent with a friend who works for another company. And this friend was in a decline because her boss had sent an email that said, it's your project, do whatever you want. And my friend was hysterical, saying, how dare my boss wash her hands of this? And I finally encouraged her, for goodness sake, go to your boss and clear this up. And her boss said, no, no, I meant it really sweetly and enthusiastically. I'm so pleased it's her project, and she's so smart, I want her to do whatever she wants. So we drive ourselves nuts, but I think our point was America is driving itself nuts trying to figure out what all these emails mean.
You know, and the other thing that sort of occurred to us is this year went on, is to get off email. You know, if we're having trouble interpreting something, especially something that has a lot of emotion associated with it, you know, pick up the phone. It is, you know, the tough thing about email is that you get lulled into this eye for an eye communication. You know, if it comes to you over email, you have to respond by email. And things can really go awry that way when, you know, yes, email can clear up a whole bunch of things. You know, you can make dinner reservations and you can, you know, make arrangements with friends much more quickly. On the other hand, if it's something that's very complicated that you need time to explain, especially if it has emotional content, you've got to remember, okay, pick up the phone. Go walk down the hall and talk to that person if it's possible.
We're talking to David Shipley and Will Schwalbe, co-authors of Send, Think Before You Click, The Essential Guide to Email for Office and Home. Let's hear from Adrian in Des Moines. Adrian, welcome to Talk the Nation.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Hi.
Wonderful, thank you. I just had a funny story about an email backfiring in a business sense, showing you really have to be technologically savvy as well as having tact. My good friends is a wedding planner, and she is the head of a big event center in Dubuque, Iowa. And she ended up having someone that was rather high maintenance and very demanding, albeit spending quite a bit of money.
Around a wedding? Surprising.
Really? I know. It's shocking.
Yes. And she responded accidentally to – she sent a letter to her boss, basically – implying, you know, what a high-maintenance person this is, or what a, you know, witch, this is a nightmare, and ended up sending reply to all.
Oh, no!
Sending it back to the bride.
Ouch.
In its full entirety, and needless to say, she ended up losing that business. Of course, she tried to explain her way out of it, but there was really no explanation for that. So you kind of have to know what you're doing a little bit before...
Absolutely. That is so painful. The reply all button has caused more problems than probably any other button on the machine.
And so what could that, I mean, other than potentially not dishing her client on email, what could she have done?
Well, you know, that's the biggie. That's a great place to start. we figured out there's a whole mess of things email is great for and a lot that it isn't. And it's something about email. David, as we were working on this, told me it's like having a fraternity brother that eggs you on to do evil things. So we have to remember that email sometimes encourages the lesser angels of our nature. And when we find ourselves writing one of those sort of hideous, snarky, nasty, barbed things, maybe it's time to call it a night, walk around the block, do something else.
Yeah, you know, the beauty of a letter is that there were so many different opportunities for your superego to kick in. I mean, you would, you know, write whatever you were saying about this horrific client, and you would then have to, you know, address the letter and put the thing in the envelope and put a stamp on it and go find a mailbox. And there were, you know, there was a built-in braking mechanism, but you have that giant send key that is sitting there, and it is so huge and it is so alluring, and it is very easy to hit that before you've really thought through what it is that you're sending.
So is there any way to make amends?
Well, not on email. I think that would be one thing that Will and I are absolutely unanimous on, that if you do something like that, you really have to pick up the phone, or you have to go there, or you have to find other ways to grovel. There are limits to email groveling.
Are you fans of the blaming the there's something wrong with my email program? I never intended to respond to all. It must be some computer glitch.
Absolutely not. You know, I had a horrible thing last week when I was on vacation, and I had failed to set my out-of-office reply. It was completely my fault, and which is probably a good thing going into this project, because we really do need to reinforce that, you know, we're much better at email, but we're still going to make mistakes.
We're talking about what makes a good email and how to avoid those embarrassing email disasters. We'll take more of your calls at 800-989-TALK, or you can send us email. We promise to be nice. The address is talk@npr.org. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington, D.C. Neil Conan is on his way to Tucson, Arizona. He'll be there Thursday for a special remote broadcast. And we actually need a little help from you before that show from Tucson. There's a short survey we've posted at our blog. Just a few questions about some issues that might be considered in, well, the gray area of the moral continuum. You can take the survey at npr.org/blogofthenation, and we'll have the results on Thursday. Today, we're talking with David Shipley and Will Schwalbe about their new book, Send, The Essential Guide to Email for Office and Home. We've posted an excerpt from the book, including 7 reasons when it's better to use the telephone, at our webpage, npr.org/talk. If you have questions for our guests, give us a call, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And join the conversation at our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We were talking a little bit about mistakes you make on email, and you all agree it's never okay to apologize on email. It's always a lame response.
Yeah, well, we think that it's good to start the apology on email. Sometimes it's the only thing you can do is to fire off an email saying, oh, my goodness, I've just made the most awful error. But you just can't let it stop there. If it's a really big error, you're going to have to apologize in all sorts of ways.
We have an email from Betty in Chester, California, who says, I try to read my email out loud and listen to what it actually says and what it sounds like. They tend to be more informative, clearer, and more polite. My brain seems to process the spoken word in a manner that's different than the way it processes the written word, and I pick up a lot of errors, inaccuracies, and vagueness this way.
That's great. Complicated in a cubicle, or if you're surrounded by a lot of people. But great to read it aloud in your head. Anything you can do to slow yourself down and to make yourself aware of the things that you forget. I mean, I think that's the biggest lesson of the book. You know, the woman who was talking about the reply all disaster, there are several species of email disasters. Some are unavoidable. You know, people will always mess up by, you know, hitting a reply all every once in a while or sending something before it's ready. And you know, people will always do, you know, really stupid things on email. There will be a certain element of the population that will always try to insider trade on email or do something that is, you know, people have been doing bad things, whether it's on the phone or in letters or on cave walls for millennia. But there are also the email mistakes that come from not being aware of what this medium is all about. I mean, if you look at the U.S. attorney scandal right now, you know, the people in the Justice Department, we're probably thinking about a lot of things, but one thing that you somehow become unaware of is that this is a very permanent medium.
Mm-hmm. It seems so ephemeral.
It seems so ephemeral because it comes so fast. I mean, one, it's very, very new. You know, the lifetime of email, you know, I think, you know, most of us, Will and I are in our mid-40s, you know, this is still something that is, that's fairly new to us. So nobody has really developed sort of the, I don't know, almost the evolutionary awareness of its dangers. You know, you don't see that lion outside the cave. You know, email is this nice, friendly thing that's at your desk. Plus, it happens really fast. So, you know, your mind kind of shuts off to the things that you need to be aware of, namely, okay, this thing is permanent. I mean, you look at, you know, email has so many built-in defaults that you sort of ignore them. You know, the to line, CC, the subject line, the from, all these little things that pop up so conveniently in your programs that you sort of start, you know, looking over them. And one thing that we really tried to do in this book, or in writing it, that was so useful to us was cultivating almost a mindfulness, cultivating an awareness of the dangers. And if you're aware of the dangers, then you can start emailing much more effectively.
Let's hear from Michelle in Buffalo. Michelle, welcome to Talk of the Nation. Hey, Michelle, you're on the air.
Hi. I went through a dead zone, I think. Listening to the beginning of the program when your guests were talking about the proper things to put into an email so that you get fewer emails, it reminded me of writing letters because I've had a computer for probably 15 years and resisted using email for communication, just didn't want to do it because I've written letters for so many years. Mm. I communicated with my family and my friends with letters, and I loved that medium. And when they were describing certain things to put in, especially the tone and the inflections that you get, I find that I got it across very well, and people that corresponded with me also got their tone and inflection across very well writing. I think it's pretty much the same thing because I have changed over now to using email instead of handwriting letters, and I will, like one of the other callers said, leave it for a little while and go back to it and read it over if it's a long letter and it's an important one. And then you find a lot of you know, I want to take something out or put something in, edit it a little bit. And I think it's very easy to put your emotions into it. It's just using the right kind of words.
It's that's a great point. Another great way to sort of give yourself that pause when you're doing email is to send it to yourself. Then you read it, and then you can forward it on. Because that duplicates what you're talking about with letters, where you can have a letter sit around on your desk for a little while and reread it a few times before you send it. The problem with email is people get very itchy-fingered, and the second they're done, they want to hit send.
And the trick is, you know, remembering to hold on to it. I mean, when I was talking about my out-of-office faux pas, I sort of drew two lessons from that. You know, the first is that, you know, we'll continue to make mistakes. The second is people really depend and expect a quick response on email. You know, I was out of email contact for a week, and in going through my inbox Sunday when I got back into town, you know, there were some people who had sent three or four emails saying, hey, what's up? You know, where are you? Why haven't you responded to me on this? And the situation is very different from a letter, whereas, you know, you send a letter and people will, you know, cut you a little bit of slack. With email, you know, the response time, the built-in response time is really a lot shorter.
Here's an etiquette question via email from Tom in San Francisco. Are emails still considered taboo as a form of saying thank you following a job interview? I just interviewed for a job and noticed on the conference room schedule where the meeting took place, I was the last interview for the job. I'm afraid if I waited for the Postal Service to deliver my note, they may have already decided on the position.
It's interesting. The development that we've noted is the applicant who sends the email right after the interview. So who says, couldn't wait to tell you how much I enjoyed the interview and how excited I am about the job. A proper thank you note will follow. Yeah. That applicant, who then does follow with a proper thank you written thank you really has the best of both worlds going.
Yeah, as long as somebody knows something real is coming, the interstitial thank you email is a great thing.
But doesn't take the place of a handwritten note.
Absolutely not.
This is email from Paul in Tulsa, Oklahoma, who says, would you please ask your guest if it's normal for a person to have two email voices? Approaches. The way I send email in my professional life is very different than how I send email to my closest friends and family. I occasionally get the two mixed up, but never with any serious results. Please tell me this is normal and everyone else does this too.
As long as you aren't hearing voices, absolutely.
It's very normal. We quoted in the book a 12-year-old friend named Ming, in fact, my goddaughter, who gave us a wonderful little essay about the voice she uses on email for chatting with her friends, where the topic is almost always boys and cuss words are part of it, and the voice she uses when emailing her dad or mom, which is very different. And we thought it was a riot because Ming really understands something that a lot of adults don't, but that our correspondent to the show clearly does. Of course you have different voices, yep, just as you have different voices when you talk with different groups of people.
But email can also delude you into sort of forgetting those distinctions. I mean, if you're using, you know, you have email for at home and at the office and you have it on your handheld and everything is getting kind of mushed together. So it's important to sort of cultivate the mindfulness that allows you to sort of separate out who you're writing to.
Let's hear from Rose in San Francisco. Rose, welcome to Talk of the Nation. Rose, can you hear us? You're on the air.
Yeah.
Hi. Rose?
Hello.
Hi, yes. You're on the air.
Thank you. So I have a funny email story. I was working at a company where almost the entire company was laid off. Our entire division was laid off. A good friend of mine who was manager at the time was laid off. And so I found myself with lots of extra responsibilities because I was left working. And so I was emailing my friend saying, wow, you know, I've got all this extra work. I've asked one of the VPs for a raise. I doubt he'll give it to me. He's such a cheap SOB. I doubt I'll ever get the raise. And hit send. And when I hit send, I realized that instead of sending it to my friend's home email address, I had sent it to his work email address, and he had been laid off, and that work email address was being monitored by the cheap SOB.
Oh, no.
That week, they flew out to San Francisco and fired me.
Oh, that is a cautionary tale.
But, Rose, they fired you in person, not over email?
Fired me in person.
Thanks for your call. That is a cautionary tale. We have email from Marilee in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Please ask your guest to discuss the importance of correct spelling and grammar, especially when messages are sent to large audiences. I've received far too many that are totally embarrassing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's really interesting. Will and I went down to this festival in Austin, Texas, called South by Southwest. That is sort of there's a music portion, and there's a film portion, then there's a big interactive portion, and it's sort of, you know, a lot of people who have been steeped in technology, much more so than we are, who've been doing this for a long, long time. And in spending the weekend, you sort of, you go around and you have a beer with people and you talk. And we did kind of an informal survey on what bothered them about email. And the really interesting thing about it is that many of them had exactly those concerns, you know, very traditional concerns. People who don't use a proper salutation, people who don't check their spelling, people who don't punctuate, people who don't use a proper sign-off. You know, very, very basic things. And, you know, that was absolutely. You know, people need to be able to read what you write. People also need to know that you put a little bit of care into what you're sending them.
Do you think people are more forgiving of those mistakes when the email comes from a handheld?
As long as you say that it's from a handheld. I mean, that's a huge thing. I used to think having that little BlackBerry line at the bottom of my handheld was sort of advertising for BlackBerry. And so I, you know, didn't use it. And then I realized that, you know, so much of email is mirroring. If somebody sends me, you know, a beautifully wrought note and I respond to them via BlackBerry as I'm rushing to the subway and I'm typing with my thumbs and I'm trying to get my Metro card through the turnstile, you know, and I reply with either a single word or a single word that's possibly misspelled, it's incredibly useful to have that sent from a handheld, sent from a BlackBerry at the bottom of that email, so they know that given the circumstances, if I'd been sitting comfortably in my office, if I'd had time to compose a proper response, I would have sent a response that respectfully mirrored what they had sent me, and that I will probably do that when I get back to a desktop.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We have email from Justin at work who says, was curious to the guest's thoughts on avoiding embarrassing emails while inebriated. This has happened to me more than once. Angry tirades, secrets divulged, crushes confessed, and don't tell me stop drinking.
Oh, no, I would never tell anyone to do that. I think we've heard more and more stories of the drunk emailing version of what used to be called drunk dialing. And it's particularly prevalent with people who have handhelds or BlackBerries and keep them by their bed. And people read emails at all times of the day and night. And yes, it can be incredibly tempting when you really shouldn't to check the little BlackBerry or handheld and fire off some awful thing that you bitterly regret the next day. So if you know you're going out for a night on the town, I would hide the handheld in the sock drawer.
Save yourself.
Save yourself.
And don't drive an email, too. That's
yes.
A bad idea.
Yeah, that's not good.
Jessica in Lansing, Michigan. Jessica, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi. I was wondering if you could talk more about, you just mentioned salutations a few minutes ago, and I think I might be one of those sensitive people who's put off a punctuation in a salutation. But when I see a salutation that says, hi, Jessica, colon, as opposed to hi, Jessica, comma, I get all nervous about that.
And do you have a preference between hi, Jessica, and dear Jessica?
Well, the hi, Jessica, colon is the thing that makes me feel like I'm being talked down to. Dear Jessica with a comma, I don't know. If there's a standard salutation practice, I was just wondering about that.
Would you rather have your last name? Are you fine that if I were to write you and say, hi, Jessica, would you prefer that I write you Ms.? I'm afraid I don't know your last name, but...
Oh, no. It's actually the punctuation that makes me feel like... I'm a subordinate or something like that.
And that's so interesting, yeah.
With the colon or the comma or what?
You mean the colon seems too strong? The colon seems talking down and the comma seems softer and more respectful.
More friendly, yeah. The comma seems more friendly.
One of the things that we realized is these things are very situational. And so the safest course when you're initiating an email is dear Mr. or Ms. last name. The safest course, if you're replying, is to mirror whatever the person who wrote you does.
Yep.
You can't go wrong by doing that. And there are some sort of things to keep in mind. We had a conversation with Bill Fitzsimmons, who's dean of admissions at Harvard, and talked to him about his view on emails and emailing. And he told us that it's not unusual for him to get an email from a student who's applying to Harvard that's, hiya, Bill, or hey, Dean, or... Yo, Fitz, and that's probably not wise. He's a very generous soul and says that that wouldn't automatically exclude someone, but I think caution is the better part of valor.
And I think you're right. I think a comma is much nicer than a colon. A colon has sort of a cold officialness to it.
Jessica, thanks for your call. I had no idea punctuation was so fraught.
Punctuation is very fraught. One story that came to our attention, which we both loved and shows where a little punctuation goes a long way. Friends of ours were involved in this office flame war. The entire office had stopped work, and everybody was really doing nothing but sending each other nasty emails. And finally, one person stepped in, took it off email, talked to everybody, got everybody calmed down, and then wrote one final email saying, are there any other problems? To which one person meant to reply, no, period, thanks to you, exclamation point, but accidentally replied, no thanks to you, exclamation point.
Dear.
And the whole flame war erupted again.
Well, thank you both so much for your time today. David Shipley is the deputy editorial page editor and op-ed editor of the New York Times, and Will Schwalbe is the editor-in-chief of Hyperion Books. Their book is called Send, The Essential Guide to Email for Office and Home. Again, there's an excerpt at npr.org/talk.